Hey there! You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts and OSU Small Farms Program shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We're illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley. I am your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator with the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. On this episode, we're talking with Lindsay McCleary, Restoration Ecologist with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Run. She is also a voting member on the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Lindsay has been working with the tribe for 12 years. I'm excited to introduce Lindsay with everyone today on the podcast to highlight the tribe's land management in the Willamette Valley. So a big welcome to you, Lindsay.
Thanks, Morgan. I'm happy to be here with you today and spend some time talking about the tribe's management in the valley.
Yeah, exciting. So the sun is shining and summer's here. What better day to be talking about our environment? But I'd like to begin with a little introduction. So if you could share a little bit about yourself, your educational background, and what drove you toward a career in conservation.
Thanks, Morgan. Again, hello, everybody. My name is Lindsay McCleary, and I work with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. I've worked in their Natural Resources Department on the Fish and Wildlife Program since 2010. But prior to that, I grew up in Michigan. So I moved out to Oregon in 2009. But I grew up in the Upper Peninsula, a little town called St. Ignace, right above the Mackinac Bridge. And then I went to college at Central Michigan University. Go Chips. But I actually went to college thinking that I wanted to be a teacher. I think teachers are great and they're a very underappreciated position in our society, but I found out quickly that it necessarily wasn't for me. And I didn't realize that there were careers where you could get paid to work outdoors, outside. So I grew up kind of riding bikes and grew up on Lake Huron and spent a lot of time outside, but didn't really realize that there were career pathways to continue that passion for being outdoors. So I found out that there was a career pathway that Central Michigan offered, and it was called Outdoor Recreation. The full title is Recreation Parks and Leisure Services Administration, but that's just a really long title to say. You kind of work in and around outdoor pursuits and in outdoor activities and help manage landscapes for that. So anyway, I started working for the Forest Service seasonally in the summertime. I started as a trails technician and then moved over to a biological science technician. And that was at the Huron-Manistee National Forest out of Baldwin, Michigan. And that really set the foundation for me to realize that you can get paid to work outdoors and have a career managing lands for the betterment of our society. So fast forward, I moved out to Oregon in 2009 without a job. Michigan's a great place to be from, but realized that my wings were bigger than that. And so moved out to the great, beautiful state of Oregon, and then saw this job posting with the tribe shortly after that. And it was a similar job position that I held with the Forest Service. So I took that job with the tribe. I was lucky enough to interview and be offered the position and then have moved up since then.
Great. Thank you so much, Lindsay. What would you recommend for Oregon's youth that may be thinking about, you know, exploring a similar career path?
Yeah, good question. I think kids these days don't spend enough time outside. Some of them are lucky enough to be able to do that. But if I were an Oregon youth right now, some of the things that I would recommend are looking for those seasonal positions. Certainly, I know the Forest Service offers a lot of those, but the tribe does too. The tribe has a youth crew program where they do trail construction, trail maintenance, and special projects. That's eligible for, I believe, kids that are 14 or 15 through the ages of 18. And then they also have positions for crew leaders for folks that are older than 18. And then we also have a fire crew program. And so that's seasonal work in the summertime, usually for kids 18 and over, but that's focused on wildland fire suppression. But certainly looking at internships or job shadowing, talk with people who work in the outdoors. You know, there's lots of different agencies, not just the tribe, not just Forest Service, but there's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. There's Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. There's the Nature Conservancy. There's land trusts, soil and water conservation districts. There's lots of places that students as well as people can tap into to have more robust conversations about people who work in this industry all the time. And I think for those people who don't work in this industry, it's easy to overlook and not even know that this is an industry and that people do manage landscapes. And, you know, the tribal perspective has been that, you know, since time immemorial, people have always been on the landscape. Some people think of conservation and restoration exclusive of human activity, but the tribe doesn't view it that way. Humans have always been part of the environment and the ecosystem. And, you know, I think it's important that land management entities continue to manage landscapes in a good way.
Great. Thank you. And, you know, going to tribal land management, going back to restoration in 1983, the tribe reacquired land spanning from what area to what area?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde is one of the very few tribes, not only in the state of Oregon, but across the country that lost its federal recognition. That period is called the termination period, where the federal government terminated its relationship with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. And so that was a really dark period. Tribal members didn't want to take that as the way of life going forward. And so worked for many years in Washington, D.C. and in the Grand Ronde community to rebuild the tribe and rebuild federal recognition, which came in the 1980s. So historically, the tribes that comprise the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde stretch from southwestern Washington all the way to Northern California. So that's quite a big land base. Upon restoration, the tribe was given a set of acres to manage. At that time in the 80s, upon restoration, it was only about 10,200 acres. Since then, it has been the tribe's mission to actively regain lands within the ceded lands territory. So, you know, within those historic ranges. Right now, the tribe's portfolio is about, I think, just over 16,000 acres of land. Those are used for a variety of purposes: government, housing, infrastructure, and natural resources. And so of those 16,000 acres, almost 14,000 is under the management of the Natural Resources Department because it has some component of forestry or conservation status. So right now, a lot of our lands stretch from kind of north of Grand Ronde, so Tillamook area, all the way south to Monroe, and then east over to Staten, kind of east of Salem, and then up in the Portland metro area. So that's a big area, but lots of our land holdings kind of fall within that area, with the majority of the lands being in the Grand Ronde community.
Thank you so much. And you mentioned your title is Restoration Ecologist. Just in case any of our listeners don't know, can you explain what a restoration ecologist does in relation to the land that you're working on?
Yeah, restoration ecologist is kind of just a fancy word for saying land steward or land manager. What I spend a lot of my time doing is writing management plans for a variety of the conservation properties that we hold and manage, writing grant applications, writing habitat prescriptions, and then sort of implementing those prescriptions. So I'll just kind of pause here and provide a little bit of context. I've always worked on the Fish and Wildlife Program, which is within the Natural Resources Department. Our Natural Resources Department has several other programs, including timber and roads, silviculture and fire protection, recreation. And so I started out as a biological technician. That's a fancy word for being like a field tech, doing a lot of field surveys, data collection, timber sale compliance. I moved into a wildlife biologist position that mostly managed big game and their habitat on the tribal reservation. And then this position that I'm in now, the restoration ecologist, was created in 2018. It was a brand new position, and it was created to basically be the point of contact and the manager for a lot of the conservation properties that we have reacquired through the Willamette Wildlife Mitigation Program. So a general day for me is I get to go to the field if I'm lucky enough. And when I'm in the field, I'm either doing some level of data collection or assessment on the current habitat conditions. That might be taking photo points. That might be observing how dense an invasive species is or is not present in certain areas, checking up on previous projects, seeing how the land is responding to previous treatments. But I do spend a fair amount of time in the office writing management plans, and we write plans on a 10-year period. So it's kind of labor intensive to write a management plan. So we want them to last a while. We write plans for 10-year periods, and then we turn around and take those plans and seek outside funding to help implement those goals, objectives, and actions within those plans. We apply to lots of different agencies to bring in grant funding, and that grant funding pays for any habitat restoration that's going to be done on the properties. So as an example, oak habitat is something that is highly fragmented and declining in the Willamette Valley. It was historically widespread and managed by the Kalapuya fire practices, and now it's in severe decline and has encroachment with things like Douglas fir. And it's one of those habitats where it requires maintenance. And so that's the human element that's always been here since time immemorial, managing those landscapes, managing those prairie and oak woodland and oak savanna habitats with fire. But removing fire from the landscape, colonization happens by other vegetation. And so, one of the projects that I might be working on is removing some of the fir or other shrub and woody species that are encroaching upon prairies or encroaching upon oak savannas.
Last month we got to do a tour at OSNI and see the oak restoration work that you've been doing. I was wondering if you could share with our listeners maybe some of the other active projects that you're working on currently.
Yeah. So this year, 2022 is going to be a big year for us. We've got a couple big projects happening. So one of our properties is kind of northeastern Polk County, and it's called Noble Oaks. That is a over 600 acre conservation parcel, kind of located right between Highway 18 and Highway 22. And prior to tribal reacquisition, it was managed by the Nature Conservancy. They also acquired it through the Willamette Wildlife Mitigation Program. But prior to them, it was owned by Dick and Nancy Noble, who used it as basically an African wildlife safari sanctuary. So there used to be rhinoceroses and giraffes on the site, lots of different exotic animals. But this year we have partnered with Lomikotze Restoration Project out of Ashland, Oregon, and sought an Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board restoration grant to do a large-scale oak thinning project. So it's going to be about 200 acres, and we are looking to promote and restore oak habitat on the site. So just like I kind of mentioned before, there is oak habitat existing, but it's overcrowded with oaks themselves, and it has a lot of encroaching fir, big leaf maple, other trees that outcompete oak, because oak is really slow growing and those trees are a lot faster. So we're going to be doing a big oak thinning project there. I'm very excited. There's a bunch of what we call legacy oaks, so really big open grown oaks that are going to be released. And what that means is basically removing all of the competing vegetation around those really old oaks. So that's a project that's happening. It's going to start probably mid-July. We have two other big projects happening on our Chahalpam property, which is along the North Saniam River. One of them is replacing basically a non-functioning bridge that has like four undersized culverts underneath it. It's a fish passage issue. It's a debris passage issue. It's a water flow issue. So we also secured a separate Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board restoration grant to replace the entire crossing. So we're going to remove that bridge and replace it with a bridge that's functioning, which means it'll be free flowing from underneath the structure. Also on Chahalpam, we're going to be restoring North Saniam River flow to an off-channel pond that is significant for Oregon chub. Oregon chub is the first fish to ever be delisted from the Endangered Species Act. That's very exciting and a successful story for progress. And the population at Chahalpam contributed to that delisting effort. The problem with the off-channel pond right now is that it's only inundated by the North Saniam River on a two-year interval basis at best, which means it is disconnected and creates a great opportunity for invasive species. So we have a lot of warm water fish, bullfrogs, nutria, invasive plants such as yellow flag iris and Ludwigia, and it creates conditions that are great for invasive species, not so great for native species, including the Oregon chub. So we're going to hopefully excavate the old relic channel and get some more flow in there and create conditions that are more suitable for native species. So those are three really big projects that are happening in 2022. I didn't know that they were all going to happen at the same time. About 2 years ago, I spent a lot of time writing these grants. And so they're all happening at the same time. So it's going to be a really busy summer for us.
And just a quick update, if you're just joining us, I'm here with Lindsay McCleary, restoration ecologist with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. And you're listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. All right. So in general, what are the tribe's priorities with land management?
So the tribe's priorities with land management sort of depend on the land itself. Something that I found really appealing to Grand Ronde was when I came out here and I was interviewing for the tribe and working for the tribe, I was really blown away that they consider their reservation the 10,200 acres of forested land. Where I come from, usually tribal reservations are housing. Grand Ronde definitely has housing in the Grand Ronde community, but the reservation is a working forest. And that was really attractive to me and told me that they really valued natural resources management. So that area is managed for multiple use, but it's definitely managed for timber production. So prior to Spirit Mountain Casino being built and after restoration, the tribe's main revenue source was timber management, and a lot of the revenue for the tribe was gleaned off of timber sales. And so the reservation is managed for timber, but is also managed for hunting and fishing, solitude, and recreation. So it's a multi-use system. You know, they definitely, the tribe also has land that is used for housing, for government infrastructure, just kind of depends on what is existing upon reacquisition. But in my world, a lot of the tribal reacquisitions have to do with conservation. And so I mentioned the Willamette Wildlife Mitigation Program. That's a program that's running from 2010 to 2025. So we're getting close to the sunset of that program. But it's a Bonneville Power Administration funded, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife administered program to acquire real property for mitigation. And so what that means is the program looks for sponsors to acquire properties. The sponsor typically holds the deed and the title, and then the Bonneville Power Administration holds a conservation easement over the property. meaning that that property will always be held for fish and wildlife habitat into perpetuity. Long after you and I are ever gone, that's still going to be held for fish and wildlife habitat. So that's a really, really awesome program that the tribe's been able to be a part of in reacquiring historic lands. A lot of those priorities tend to be on rare and declining habitats. So oak is definitely a high, high priority. Oak savanna, oak woodland, upland prairie. Again, those landscapes were historically managed by the Kalapuya fire practices across the Willamette Valley. So reacquiring those lands, doing habitat restoration, and then having the opportunity with our own fire crew, along with partners, to return fire to a historically fire-dominated landscape is very exciting for the tribe. But that's not to say, you know, there's other priorities as well, including fish recovery and riparian floodplain reconnection. And that, you know, kind of speaks to the North Sandy M properties, where we have a couple properties up along that river. And so it really depends on what the landholding exhibits upon reacquisition. But, you know, I think the tribe's focus is certainly on protecting, conserving, and restoring all native habitats, with a special focus on floodplain connectivity, fisheries, and oak-dominated landscapes.
Thank you. Yeah. And one other thing that I wanted to bring up for our listeners, it's kind of become a buzzword lately in conservation, traditional ecological knowledge, or TEK. So for those that don't know this term, could you explain what it means and how does the tribe incorporate this into current land management practices?
Yeah, thanks, Morgan. Well, TEK is definitely a buzzword right now, traditional ecological knowledge. And to me, what that means is really the tribe's relationship with the land. It means the plants that are there, how they're cared for, how they're managed to be able to be used for a resource, but also how not to be depleted and used for several generations into the future. I think it means the way that the tribe and tribal members have connections to the landscape and connections to place. Historically, you know, the tribes lived in seasonal rounds, and so they might go up higher in the Cascade areas or higher in the mountain ranges to gather huckleberries during different times of the year, or be down in the lowlands harvesting camas. They knew when to go certain places, how to manage the landscape, and how to utilize those resources. And I think in today's world, you know, something that I think is important to recognize is that traditional practices and tribal culture isn't a relic of the past. It's alive and breathing today. And it's not something that's in a museum. It's something that's still continued and practiced. And it changes over time, just like everything does. And, you know, in our society today, there's traditional practices that reflect the time that we're in today. So when I think about TEK, I think about, you know, what plants are used for food purposes, basketry, medicinal purposes. You know, something that comes to mind for me is managing hazel patches. And so hazel is something that is management dependent, specifically on fire. And so if you, you know, mechanically cut back or utilize fire to burn through hazel patches, the next year it produces straight shoots that are ideal for basketry. Camas is something that's very similar. Camas bulbs enjoy disturbance and benefit from human disturbance. So as camas patches are managed by humans, those bulbs stay closer to the surface and produce smaller bulblets around the main bulbs. And so if you just left a camas patch alone and never managed it, those bulbs get really deep in the soil and are difficult to reach and kind of get real comfortable being rooted down there. But if you manage it on a regular practice, those bulbs are closer to the surface and they're producing more bulbs for productivity. So, you know, when I think about how the tribe incorporates TEK into their land management practices, we partner regularly with the Cultural Resources Department. And so I have counterparts, you know, my position is a restoration ecologist, and I do fish and wildlife policy as well. There's a cultural policy analyst that I work well with, and we coordinate on, you know, different projects on the properties, what plants are there, what we need to be enhancing. And usually it's a lot of first foods or basketry materials or medicinal plants. But, you know, we also have a tribal nursery program at the Natural Resources Department, growing a lot of first foods, and cultural resources has been an intricate part of getting that program up and off the ground. And a lot of times those plants that are grown in the tribal nursery are turned around and planted into our restoration projects. So yeah, when I think about TEK, it's really about what was the historic use of the property? What are the native plants that are there that we can continue to enhance for tribal member benefit?
Yeah, thank you. And the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District and the tribe partnered to produce a TEK video for part of the Regional Conservation Partnership Program, or RCPP. Can you talk about the role that the tribe plays in this particular program?
A few years ago, we were working with Polk SWCD on the application. They're the applicant, and the tribe is a partner on that project. It's a five-year funding program. It's focused on oak habitat, which is great. And then it provides, you know, funding for Polk County landowners to help restore prairie and oak habitats on their property. And so we came in with, you know, staff time, such as my time, to help with administering the program. But also we used a lot of our conservation properties and acquisitions as match. So I believe we used Noble Oaks, Osney, which you mentioned we toured, and then our most recent acquisitions, which is called Tekilth, and that's off of Harmony Road, kind of in the Buell Red Prairie Water District area. The tribe was a partner on that program, and then also hopes to help participate, you know, in terms of the TEK portion for landowners, and then also be able to use some of that funding to continue habitat restoration on some of the tribal properties as well.
Lindsay, the work that you're doing now will reach so far into the future. How do you imagine the tribal lands 100 years, 200 years from now, and, you know, the impact that you're making?
You know, when I think about 100 years from now, it's sometimes hard to conceptualize, but also that's sort of the track that we're on. I think about my position and what I do as more of a marathon, not a sprint. And so it will take decades, if not multiple decades, to get towards desired future conditions. So I envision that the properties, you know, the conservation properties or the tribal land holdings are in more properly functioning condition than they are now, depending on whatever habitat type that may be. They are resilient to catastrophic events and climate change. They are providing resources necessary for tribal members to continue their ways of life. They provide educational opportunities to learn about tribal management and tribal ways of connecting with the landscape. And they are, you know, aesthetically pleasing and a beautiful place for people to come and enjoy and learn about the tribe.
How can our listeners support the tribe's mission in caring for the land?
Listeners can definitely support the tribe's mission. I think getting involved in learning about the tribe is probably the first step. You know, looking at the different functions that the tribe does, you know, how they function in Polk County and in the greater service area. I think the first and best way is building those relationships. I think everything in the world kind of goes around with relationships and sort of who you know and building those connections. I think that's a big value to the tribe. I think that sometimes that takes time building partnerships, building relationships, finding out about the tribe, but certainly participating in events such as the OSNI tour, and then connecting with Polk SWCD to connect you with tribal departments and tribal staff would be a good way. And then also, you know, being out on the properties. Most of our properties are open for public access. We don't allow hunting at this time, but we definitely allow recreation such as hiking, bird watching, any non-resource extracting activity. Public is available. But we also, you know, host events and tours, and we have another project that's happening called Plants for People. And that's a partnership with Institute of Applied Ecology. And that's a way that folks can get involved too. That would be involved in like planting at Shampooey State Park.
Thanks, Lindsay. What is your favorite natural space to explore in Oregon and your favorite Oregon critter?
It's really, really difficult to pick. But for me, one of my favorite places is Crater Lake. And then in terms of my favorite critter, I love seeing elk herds in the valley or up on the cusp of going into the higher mountain areas, but also river otters. They're really fun to watch, and they look really cute and cuddly, even though they're not.
Well, Lindsay, I want to thank you for taking the time to chat with me today and, you know, enlighten our listeners on the work that you do and the tribe's land management.
Yeah, thanks, Morgan. I appreciate the invitation, and it's always great to connect with you and talk about land management in and around the local area that we live and work.
Absolutely. Likewise. I've been talking with Lindsay McCleary about her work and the tribe's land management practices, and I'm your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator for Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for taking a few minutes to share the light with us. We're grateful for a community of conservation-minded folks who know the importance of partnerships. If you would like more information on any of these topics, please visit our website, polkswcd.com, and our Facebook page for follow-up information. Also, on our website, you'll find information about upcoming events like the Small Farm Social, hosted by OSU Extension Small Farms Program, and Friends of Family Farmers, as well as our Native Plant Sale coming up this fall. And if you liked what you heard on the Conservation Spotlight, tune in next month to KMUZ at 100.7 or 88.5 FM, the third Wednesdays of the month during Willamette Wake Up. On the next episode, you'll hear from Audrey Comerford. She's the agrotourism specialist with OSU Extension. Thanks for listening and your light shining.